Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to Driven to Business. We're glad you're here. Here on Driven to Business, we like to talk about a variety of subjects around, about business, around business, and that affect business. And today's program sort of falls in that latter category there. Our guest is Pam Martin. Pam is the executive director of the Hope Clinic in Lawrenceville, Georgia. And we'll go over what that is in a little bit here. Pam, the Hope Clinic provides, let me say, first of all, Pam, welcome to Driven to Business. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Pam, the Hope Clinic there in Lawrenceville, Georgia, you guys provide health care to those that are not covered by what would be more standard means of health care. And a lot of us have been probably all of us have been to emergency rooms and so forth at one time or another. And these days they're literally overflowing with people that are in there using them as clinics. And you're right in the middle of this in what you do provide to folks, although you're not in an emergency room. But can you tell us, just give us your overall impressions of that whole system and how it works?
Well, sure. I think that it's very hard for people and for users of the system to understand the system from the outside. And I think that's why places get – there are two main reasons why emergency rooms overcrowd, sometimes clinics overcrowd, et cetera. And it's basically that patients don't understand, mainly because we haven't taught them, the difference between different types of care. And there's three main types of care. And if you're inside of the type of care that you're supposed to, that you need, and you're at the place that serves that type of care, usually things are going to go pretty good. The first is emergent care. Emergent care means that you have something, if it is not attended to, there will be a very bad event happen. And I believe the state law is less than 48 hours. So that's what, if you have a really, really bad severe event, then you go to the emergency room. It's called emergent care. Then there's another type of care called urgent or acute care. And urgent or acute care is all across the map. And I think urgent is one of the things that drives people to the emergency room, especially the poor, because there are laws that dictate that emergency rooms, quote, unquote, have to take care of you. But the way the law is written, they don't have to take care of you if you have urgent care or acute care. That means something's wrong right now, it hurts a lot, or it's extremely uncomfortable, and I need to get it fixed. I need a doctor to take care of this. The third type of care, which is the vast majority of all care given in the United States, is chronic care. And chronic care means I've got some diagnosis code. In my case, I have asthma. And I will always have that diagnosis. However, I haven't had an asthma attack in 22 years. I take the appropriate medication on a daily basis. Things just roll right along and I'm fine. I get checked for it twice a year. And I do that because I can still remember the last asthma attack and I really don't want another one. So that, I think, is part of what fills these clinics up, is not understanding the difference between what's urgent and what's emergent.
I think you make a good point. You know, to a lot of us that, you know, thank the Lord, are not in medical care facilities for our own treatment very often and that don't work in it, I can just tell you that from my perspective, when I'm around a hospital or even a big doctor's office having something done, you know, like even a checkup or something, it feels to me like I'm on an alien planet. I mean, I have no idea what's going on. You know, I've always kidded about it. It's the only place on earth you go in and they tell you to take off all your clothes and just do it. You don't know this person or anything. You say, okay, and get on a bed or something. It's like, really. But I think that is, you know, people that use, I had never heard those terms before, the emergent care and urgent. I would think urgent is sort of in the eye of the beholder, perhaps. You know, if I've got a real, if my shoulders hurt me really bad, it's urgent to me. You know, maybe it's not life-threatening and all that. But I guess what you're saying is emergency rooms don't really have to treat that.
No, they don't. They ordinarily do. If it's a break or something, they do, because it's almost impossible to get into an orthopedic office.
Right.
And I was going to say, the second thing that's impacting all of the activity in emergency rooms is primarily a shortage of physicians, especially primary care physicians. And that is a national issue. That's not peculiar to Lawrenceville or Gwinnett or the Atlanta area. That's all over the United States. So when something in business goes out of supply, you know what happens. So, you know, people that stand all night in line, I guess in Australia somewhere, for an i6, an iPhone, the same things happens and is going to continue to happen in medical care as it goes further and further into short supply.
That is a great analogy, by the way, and very timely here. I've been kind of laughing at people standing in line for an iPhone. I mean, I like iPhones, but I'm not going to stand in line all night for one. I'll just wait. Come to Walmart or something, you know, and get it over there. But that is a great idea. You know, in my own case, my family, we had a family doctor for a number of years. The doctor retired. He retired, great guy, retired and moved down to Florida and sold his whole practice to another young lady doctor. And she was just great. I mean, one of the best as far as customer service and all, just top notch. I mean, you know, one of the few doctors I've ever had, you could literally email, and she would email you back at night or something. You know, I mean, just great customer service. And she ended up getting out of the medical business. And I think you sort of touched on that. She just, and I actually asked her why in person, because I happened to see her. And she said that just under the present system, she wasn't able to see customers, but I guess that's still true, but patients the way she would like to see them under some of the pressure she was under from insurance companies and other things in order to make any money there. And she said she just got out of it, and she was selling the whole clinic, shutting it down, and going into research of some kind. And I've had a couple of other doctors over here tell me the same thing. And that is something I don't know the average person understands, that we are facing a doctor shortage in this country. And it does, it's just like you said, anything else, it backs up everything before it's over with here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's going to, I don't know if you've heard the expression, we have a tendency to overestimate the impact of something in the short run and underestimate it in the long run.
Right.
And I think that this is something that we're underestimating as an impending problem. Like the area hospital, the major hospital out here, just started a residency program for primary care, but good heavens, it's only 5 doctors.
Wow.
And they're students. So, you know, when you think of that, 5 wouldn't, although it's a great starting place, I mean, we have to start somewhere. There are just so many rules and regulations, even about training physicians, that it's a wonder we ever train any of them. But the supply is getting in shorter and shorter. That's for sure.
Pam, you guys have this ministry there, the Hope Clinic, and you're the executive director. And we may have, this may go through the break before we finish this discussion here. But tell us why you founded that, how that was founded.
Well, it was basically founded for a couple of reasons. We never turned away. My husband's a physician. He's the actual medical founder of this clinic. And back when we had a commercial practice, a regular practice like anyone else, the only thing different about him was that he would not turn away anyone. And there was no such thing as dismissing an established patient. And I was the person in the back room trying to figure out how to make the books work, you know, like, how are we going to pay for this? How are we going to pay for that? And finally, I said, you know, we're losing a lot of money. And one day, and I'm just telling you the truth, the IRS called and said, did you know that if you file a loss in a business for 5 years in a row, they can force you to close your business? And I said, gee, no, I didn't know that. And they said, well, we want you to close this business. And I said, well, I have to close it down under Georgia law. You can't just close a medical practice. So I worked with them, and it took about 4 months, but we closed it down. And at the same time, I saw an article something from American Medical Association. It was about a doctor that had started up his clinic as a nonprofit and kept on rolling. Well, our doctor, Dr. Bill Martin, was definitely not going to quit being a doctor. So And he did not want to stop seeing people who needed help or people who were the insured. And so we started the Hope Clinic. And here we continue. We're now in our 13th year.
Well, that's remarkable. I made a note while you were talking just to, you know, the IRS also picks on doctors. I wasn't completely aware of that. You know, I know us that run small businesses often feel like they're picking on us for sure. That I really didn't even know what you told us about the it's hard to think about that a medical clinic loses money. You know, that is one of the I think, and I'm sure you probably have faced this many times, all of us that are not in medical practice, we just all assume doctors are making a ton of money. I'm sure you run into that.
Oh, yes. Yes. And it's easy to think that. And there are some physicians who are still making very, very good money. But I think it's starting to level out. When you look at the big system, you can always see situations where the medical side has been at fault in terms of greed. I think there has been greed in the industry. But now that we kind of got this unwilling partner called insurance,
right?
I think there's been greed on their side too. And I think that because those are, where I come from, those are called big character defects, greed. And about the only thing you can do is ask God for help. Please help us all get over the greed and take care of these patients.
That I think you're exactly right about that. You know, I am one, I actually like doctors to make a lot of money. I want the guy working on me to be very happy with what he's doing and to be making a lot of money doing it. And you know, doctors have to have so much. It's astonishing the amount of education a doctor has to have. I don't know of anything exactly that's the same way. I don't know. I can't think of anything that's the same in any other field. Not only do you guys have to have this incredible initial education, but you're required to have all sorts of ongoing things that just, I think, make it very hard on Dr. Pam, you're a great guest. If you can hang around during the break, we will talk about this some more. You sort of piqued my interest with your comment about insurance. I'd like to talk to you about that. You're listening to Driven to Business. Keep in mind, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes and all other places that I'm continually amazed to find it. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Pam Martin. Pam is the executive director of the Hope Clinic in Lawrenceville, Georgia. The Hope Clinic provides health care to those that are not covered by more standard means. Pam, before we go any further, tell us how people can find your clinic, get in touch with you, your website, phone number, whatever else you want to give out there.
All right, for sure. The Hope Clinic is in Lawrenceville, Georgia. We're actually located just about a block away from the administration, the Justice and Administration Building, which is the county seat for Gwinnett County. We're at 121 Langley Drive, and we have the whole building. And the main phone number for medical care is 770-685-1300. And the having a blank moment there, but at any rate, our website is www.hopeclinicgwinnett.info, I-N-F-O.
Yeah, I'd written that down. I'm not too familiar with the .info. I guess that's a newer, that's after we've run out of all the .coms, .biz, .net, .this, that, the other. I guess we come up with other stuff there. But,
yeah.
Let me ask you a question. You had mentioned health insurance a moment ago. That's a very controversial subject. Pam, as a person that runs a small business with employees, and we pay for our employees' insurance, and to me, insurance is a sort of a, you'd call it as a, I forgot what the term you used, as a bad partner. I forgot the term you used there for that.
And not so willing partner.
Yeah, exactly. I sort of view it in not just health insurance, but almost all insurance as a necessary evil. By the way, we have plenty of insurance people listening to the program. I'm not mocking your industry. I'm just telling you how those of us that are not in the industry view it. But and when you need it, I'm certainly glad we have it in every respect, whether it's liability or health or you name it. But as a person that tries to help uninsured people. And you had the ability to suddenly just make some changes in the way this is all done. What would you do?
Well, I'll tell you what I would do. I think a number of years ago, especially when all of our conversion from a for-profit to a not-for-profit came up, I started looking at the whole system and saying, okay, what is broken here? Because something's definitely broken. And what it is that we are nationally through about five major U.S. health insurance carriers, we are running millions and millions of non-risk transactions through a risk-based system. So the same computers, people, everything that costs a lot of money on the insurance side, they have the same or more overhead than we do. The same claim for $55 from primary care is being run through the exact same system as an $88,500 bill from a surgeon.
Right.
So we're applying the same system to two completely different problems. The definition in Georgia of a risk is the loss of two or more days of wages. So even at minimum wage, primary care rarely meets the criteria of being a risk.
Right.
So the first thing I would do is I'd separate the two systems, and I would put, like, for instance, I had actually developed a system where you could pay, at the time, this is 12 years ago, $30 a month. It would be about $40 a month now. Because if you're like me, I can pay $40 a month more easily and more reliably than I can pay you $480 a year.
Right.
Don't ask me why, but that's how most people are.
Right.
The cost of primary care is about the same cost as having a cell phone. It's actually probably an average of $15 or $20 a month less than having a cell phone. And there are an awful lot of folks that have cell phones. And I would be willing to say after being here that practically everyone that doesn't have insurance has a cell phone because it's become part of our society. That's the first thing I would do to change it is I would get primary care on some kind of a monthly payment plan. And then the second thing I would do, I like the idea of a gentleman named Dr. Ben Carson.
Yep.
And this is not political. I just think his idea of putting a certain amount of money away for each individual that is each American citizen as they are born, when they reach the age, you know, the day they're born, you put in 1,000, the day, you know, following year, 1,000. What you would create is you would create enough resources to reinsure and to back up a lot of the costs of the system.
You know, that's pretty interesting. I'd never heard it. That's a great explanation. I've never really thought about that. Putting the term you used was non-risk and risk through the same. I've never thought about that. You know, for a person like me, again, because of the way laws are written in Georgia and other places, because, you know, I own a tightly held business in three different states. So the insurance that I provide myself has to be very similar to the insurance that I provide employees. In other words, I can't go buy myself, at least not without some tax ramifications. I can't buy myself a different policy than I'm providing to employees. But for me, for a person in my income class, what I would do if it were me, I would have a $15,000 deductible and only use insurance for absolute emergencies. But I can't do that to employees who are not in a position to do that. So I think even things like that about the system, if we would stand back and look at how things really work instead of how we wished they would work and adjust them accordingly, I think it would be a lot better. As we get on to the program, you bring up a point about people that will have cell phones and not have insurance. You know, as a Christian, and you run a faith-based ministry, and you guys do a great job of that. My wife and I and our business, we support ministries such as that. But there is a point in there where you're looking at someone and you're saying, you know, you're uninsured and you bear some responsibility for this. So where does Pam kind of you about a thought about this? Where does your compassion and your and and enabling bad behavior. Where do those things cross?
Well, I think it crosses at the point of prayer.
Right.
And the thing is, you've got to go with your gut. When you run a nonprofit, at some point, you and the person who works with you and for you that is looking at the patient and hearing the patient's answers, like when, if you put down, if you just walk in here and you put down you got zero income, the next thing we'll ask you is, where did you sleep last night? And then the second question is, will be, have you had any food to eat, and where did you get it? Who paid for it? Because nobody has exactly nothing. You have some kind of a support system.
Right.
Now, having said that, we actually do have a very small group of patients who don't even have that support system, and we connect with churches to get them into a support system.
Right.
So they do have a place to stay. And, yes, we're very absolutely responsible. If I can divert for just a second, we had a year ago in the summertime, in just absolute awful heat, we had a diabetic patient who was truly homeless, and he was insulin dependent, and we could not, and it was like a whole separate issue. We could fix the diabetes, of course, we just couldn't figure out how are we going to get his insulin cold and keep it cold.
Right.
So people without means have a lot of problems. We look at every person as an individual, and to the best of our ability, we try not to be scammed, but we try not to judge either.
You know, that's why I really like supporting ministries like yours, and I have a lot more, and I'm not anti-government, don't hear that, but I have a lot more faith that someone like you is going to use common sense, because that's a great answer. You just talk to the person, because all of us can figure out who's trying to scam the system and who really needs help. And even if you've got someone that's, for instance, we can talk about this in a few moments. In fact, we better wait after the break. If I can come back after the break and talk to you some more, you're a great guest. Thanks for being here. You're listening to Driven to Business. This is Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Let me remind you that we are streaming live on biz1190.com in case you're about to get out of your car. And also keep in mind today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. You can go find it on iTunes and many other places that continually surprise me. And we get a lot of email from folks that hear our podcast all over the place. Our guest today is Pam Martin. Pam is the executive director of the Hope Clinic. Pam, right before the break, you were talking a little bit about how you guys vet people that come in there. And I was actually telling you during the break that I think a lot of us in business, we want to be compassionate. We want to help people. We just don't want to get scammed. And we don't want our money not going where we think it's going to go, or not really helping anybody, or enabling a bunch of bad habits. I know you run into that all the time.
Absolutely.
So as a compassionate Christian, which I know you are too, what is the, or can you define what the proper balance between not enabling a destructive lifestyle and at the same time not abandoning people that are in need, even if they are in a destructive lifestyle? How do you come down on that?
Well, it actually starts to become pretty clear once you work in it for a while. One of the things, and I don't think I can quote her directly, but that Mother Teresa, one of her comments about, and heaven knows she took care of an awful lot of people, is whose problem is it really if after your best check and everything else, somebody who's actually just scamming you gets through and gets your care or gets your resource? And the answer is, if you look at it from a spiritual perspective, it's actually their problem,
that's
not
right.
Your problem.
That's right.
So that's kind of the general way I look at it. But I think the enabling them to do things that will put them in a worse situation is completely different from guiding them to do other things that will slowly change things in a positive direction. I think a lot of us want to say, when, you know, the using alcoholic or drug addict walks in and they have diabetes, and they have asthma, and they have this COPD, et cetera, okay, well, you can quit drinking now, and then we'll take care of you. But it doesn't really work like that.
Right.
And so we evaluate the situation, and we evaluate it always first from a medical perspective, because that's the gift that we're given to give back to the Christian community, but the whole community. So we don't judge. And we try to, if at all possible, err on the side of helping the person rather than not helping the person. We had an incident here where a lady, I had a new doctor on duty, and he'd only been here maybe 2 or 3 months, and he was still getting, you know, the hang of it, and we were too. And a lady just went off on him, and she was just all upset, and down the hallway saying things that were not appropriate, et cetera, and she goes on outside and leaves. And I went up to the doctor, and I said, you know, you still, you know, you obviously keep your authority to dismiss a patient at your discretion, sir. And he said, nah, he said, it could be thyroid. Plus, he said, I know I've acted that way sometimes. And we try to keep that attitude, you know. And there, but for the grace of God, it could be one of us. We do, you know. So we try to look at it. There are a lot of mental illnesses that manifest with physical issues, and there are physical illnesses that manifest with mental issues. So we have to be very careful.
You know, my wife is pretty good about sometimes pulling me back into reality and things like that. I will see some guy on the side of the street just dressed like a moron or something, you know, and shouting obscenities at people and so forth, and I'll make some disparaging comment. My wife will say, you know, he probably never had a dad like you did to tell him not to do things like that. And I do think there is that side of us, particularly as Christians, that we've got to, I don't want to over-spiritualize, but we've got to look out at crowds like Jesus looked at them and had compassion on them. And that's not always the easiest thing to do, because we're not Jesus. I mean, it's harder for us to
it's harder to
do that. Do you think Americans on the whole are compassionate to people in need?
Absolutely. And I mean, across the board, we see compassionate Americans, and I think we're nationally compassionate for our own people, and we're internationally compassionate. And if you bring out the giving spirit in people, it really is you just get to see more of blessing and how blessing in general works. We have a box that we keep in our front waiting room where we ask our uninsured patients and poor patients, do they have a can of anything that they can spare from their pantry to go to our local food co-op out here, which is the Lawrenceville Cooperative Ministries. And they have a regular food distribution that we do out here in Lawrenceville. And that thing is filled up all the time, because even the poorest of the poor want to give to the poor.
Right.
And I think that is that's a deep spirit within us.
I agree with that. And by the way, I'm familiar with the Lawrenceville Cooperative Ministry, as well as the Lilburn Cooperative Ministry and others, which we try to support. And I'm sure there are many others in the metro area. I'm not just picking on those two that do great work like that. You know, I was one of the things that I think I'd mentioned this in the last segment, but we enjoy helping ministries that have expertise in the areas they're helping. Now, obviously, I can't do much medically for anybody because I'm not a doctor and not even a very good patient, as far as that goes. But I certainly couldn't help anyone that had a serious medical condition of any sort. But even we do, my wife and I have been involved with some homeless ministries in downtown Atlanta and so forth. And even in dealing with people like that, many of whom have mental illnesses, many of whom are addicted to various substances, all of which is not in my background, which I don't understand. And sometimes even when I'm trying to do something compassionate, people that are involved in that will say, you shouldn't do that because that's encouraging this, that, or the other. And these are people that love them and work with them all the time. And you say, you know, you need to let that go, because in the long term, that's better for that guy. And these are people that are down there sacrificing their entire lives to care for these folks. And I think those are the kinds of things that I do think businesses should help people like the Hope Clinic and like other ministries like that. And particularly if you're a Christian business person, I think you have a responsibility to do that. There's a one of the guys, he passed away now. He used to be Larry Burkett up here in Gainesville, that for many, many years was a Christian financial advisor. And Larry always said that there was no excuse whatsoever for a profitable Christian business to be letting a ministry that which they're involved with have financial problems. And I've always sort of believed that you can't get that done. Pam, I've had the honor of being involved in speaking on missions in Africa, and the term poor, I'd never been there before until a few years ago, making over there and actually sleeping out on the ground in some villages there and so forth. The term poor over there, it has no relation to the term poor over here. And you know, their poor people are emaciated, and you know, their problems are they can't drink clean water, so they have all these parasites and everything all in them. But here in the United States, isn't it true, just from a medical standpoint, a lot of our illnesses, although they are serious illnesses, they're self-inflicted on us. Like in my case, I eat too much.
Well, I would love to agree with you about that. I agree partially that they're self-inflicted. The truth is they're more of a systemic level. One of the things we're finding now that is carbohydrates. And if you look back 300-400 years in the history of the Western European nations and this nation as it was originally settled, carbohydrates, wheat, oats, barley, all of this stuff,
right,
this is at the heart of what came on through. It's what grandma cooked, it's what my mom cooked, and, you know, on and on, it's what right. I cooked until I married this doctor. It all came to an end. Now we just eat leaves. But actually, the thinking on that changes. Some of it is part of the culture, and some of it are choices that we make. And I think that we have to ask God to help us with food the same way that we ask Him for help with anything else. And one of the things we started here this year is mental health counseling services, and we're actually going to expand those next year. We have a licensed professional counselor, and she is a Christian, and she comes in, and people can sign up to talk to her about whatever. But we have a diabetes program here where we do continuous chronic care management with diabetics. We have about 1,500 diabetics that we take care of. And one of the things that they deal with is, how do you feel about food? What do you think about food when you think about it?
I'd be afraid to be psychoanalyzed about that, to be honest. It would frighten me.
You try to get people to start understanding whether they're eating from hunger or they're eating from some other thing.
I'm with you.
So that's one of the things you have to do to make a difference in someone long term is to walk with them about how they see stuff. Before you can change the way somebody sees something, you have to understand how they see it to start with.
I think the very least you'd have to agree with me about this is that a lot of our, and what you just described there, those are the dark side of the blessings of affluence, I guess. You know, again, going back to Molly, I don't think they have a problem there with overeating. There's just not such a problem as that. Getting your daily nutrition is a big deal over there in those villages, and you know, that's a problem for them. And you know, certain times of the year, they don't have certain things available because they have to grow them and so forth. Whereas here, you know, we are so blessed with affluence here. We can go in a grocery store and pretty much there's almost nothing you can't eat if you don't want to. And I do think I was sort of wincing while you were talking there. I feel rather certain I am way on the guilty side of eating, not because I'm hungry, but because it's noon, so it's time to eat.
And we all do it. I do it. We all do it.
You know, I was also, and I'm not blaming my parents for any of this. This is all me, but you know, I was raised to clean my plate, as a lot of us were, and I have, even as an adult, I have this built-in urge or something. I can't, if I leave an empty plate, you know, there's going to be somebody starving in China or something. You know, the old
thing. So anyway, more likely to be Molly than China, I guess.
I guess you're right. We'll get that done. Pam, can you hang around one more segment? I'd like to finish talking with you. By the way, you can find the Hope Clinic, as Pam said earlier, at www.hopeclinicgwinnett.info. You can also find links to that on eddiemayfield.com. One more segment to go. You're listening to Driven to Business with Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here talking with Pam Martin of the Hope Clinic. By the way, you can find them online at www.hopeclinicgwinnett.info, the Hope Clinic in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Check them out. By the way, if you're a Christian business, you should be helping support these folks. So go there and learn how to donate. Pam, I was looking on your website, speaking of that, and looking at the vision of the Hope Clinic. But before then, I noticed one thing that sort of caught my eye here. And you sort of alluded to this earlier, but not all of your health care is provided free of charge. You sort of have a sliding scale where you might ask people to contribute and put a little skin in the game. I like that idea. Where did you come up with that?
Well, actually, the federal government has a kind of a master sliding scale they use, but you can take it and use it however the organization sees fit. And we feel that is part of our responsibility to determine where you are on the sliding scale. But sometimes we make allowances for that. So you might be someone who customarily brings in $22,000 a year, but you just sprained an ankle, so you're going to be down at least 2 weeks' pay.
Right.
We keep stuff like that into consideration. The sliding scale that we use is off of what usually goes down to an insurance carrier at a commercial, and we discount that 30%, 40%, and 50%. 88% of our sliding scale people that we take care of are at the 50% discount level. We also work with our patients on payment. We're more interested in them reliably paying us 5 or 10 or 20, whatever they can afford, dollars a month than we are in having that cash. Our patients pay for half of the cost of running our organization, and then we have a very small fundraising staff that raises the other half. And we try to be as fair as we can to all the patients and not turn any patient away.
You know, you have a term that it appears a few times on your site, which is an interesting term. It's called the improve the well-being of the medically underserved. You want to comment on that term a little bit?
Yeah, the medically underserved is actually a growing group. The medically underserved are people who may have those high front-end deductibles that we talked about earlier,
right.
And that's for the purposes of primary care. We look at that and we take a look at their economic situation and see where they are in the sliding scale, because the fact that they're making the payment on that catastrophic care is a good thing. And then we look at the rest of the situation, and we still discount to them as strongly as we can, because primary care is not going to ever run $5,000, $10,000, or $20,000. That is just about not going to happen.
Right.
So the other medically underserved are the elderly, and it depends. It changes from year to year, as every year we go through this SGR fix thing on what doctors are reimbursed to see Medicare.
Right.
We had a situation, I believe, at the beginning of 2013 when doctors were a lot of different doctors, different types of physicians, but even internists and primary care physicians were dropping Medicare patients. And we consider Medicare patients as, shall we say, walking a thin line on towards being underserved in the community.
Right.
They're having to wait longer and longer. And we think that treating the elderly poorly is not a good thing. Not a good thing for all of us, and not what Jesus would want at all.
I agree with that. Not only to me, it's just a decay in society if you don't take care of the. I think that's a very big deal. You know, you've got it's on the vision section of your website. You use the acronym HIRE to aim higher, and I hate to ask you to do this on the air, but can you go over a little bit what HIRE means, that acronym?
Well. Yeah, I will. I'll go letter by letter. Humility is the H, and the first H is humility. It's an honor to get to care for these people. They're our neighbors, even if they don't live on the same street. They're still our neighbors. Over half of the people that we see across a lot of different ethnic lines and racial lines were born and raised in Georgia, and they are our neighbors, and we are responsible. Integrity means simply always being as honest as you can be and living your life, which is hard for everyone, but it's still what we try to do is live it as if we were in a glass house.
Right.
And the gratitude for everything we've been given, and we see ourselves as being chosen by the patient, not us as choosing the patient. The patient chooses us. So that's an honor to us. And excellence, Dr. Martin calls that every symptom, every time. And that means you don't shortchange a patient. If they've got some one other thing they want to tell you about, then the doctor listens. And respect and compassion for all, because sorrow has got a really wide range of definitions. And rich people suffer the same sorrows and hurts as people who don't have things. So we try not to judge, we try to respect all of the hurt that everyone has to carry. Everybody plays hurt, I believe is the expression.
That's a great vision. Okay, talk to us business people for just a minute here, especially us Christian business people who have had some success. What are our responsibilities, as you would see it, toward the poor?
I think we all have a huge responsibility, and one of the things my pastor tells me is, Your job as a Christian starts on Monday morning, so that's where we have to show it. I think that if businesses, to the best of their ability, should tithe. I have tried that when I had a commercial business, and it went very well.
Right.
And we have tried in the past to do that. Unfortunately, we're not quite in good enough shape to do it right now at the Hope Clinic. But when things get good, we try to start giving it away and bringing attention to other nonprofits. And we support by directing people to the other nonprofits in our community that we work cooperatively with, like Rainbow Village and Partnership Against Domestic Violence, et cetera, other places here that take care of people.
Right. I'm not sure this is the right term. Is your business, are you guys growing? And I guess, Bob, I mean, is your patient load increasing?
Oh, yes. We get far more referrals in a month. We get about 225 referrals in here a month, but we physically can only really accept 70 to 80 of them.
Oh, wow.
We've constantly got a backlog of people that are batting around trying to find a place to get care, and we try to take the sickest of the people that really have got to get attention ASAP, and then try to feed the other ones in as we possibly can.
Pam, I think you guys have a great and needed ministry out there. I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate you coming on Driven to Business to talk to us about it. In about 30 seconds to a minute here, yeah, I think it's very easy for any of us to get discouraged, and I know that probably even on your staff it can be discouraging. What do you say to folks when they perhaps are feeling a little down about this ministry thing?
That we don't see it the way it really is, and I try to remind myself that because some days it gets really, really difficult, but we don't see this the way it really is. God sees this the way it really is, and we're working for Him. He's the employer, and we need to we do a good day's work for Him, and if He's okay with us, then we need to be okay. And then we go home and rest, and we get in here, and we do it all again in the morning, and we do laugh, and we do have a good time here. And it's just part of what we think is doing this. We enjoy what we do. We're not big. It's not a big sacrifice. It's a big gift to be able to do it.
Well, as I said, I appreciate you coming on the program, and I appreciate the ministry you guys are doing out there in Lawrenceville and helping medically underserved in that area. Thanks so much for coming on the program, Pam. Hope you come back and see us again.
Okay. God bless you, Eddie. Thank you
and
so much.
God bless you. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, and we'll see you again next Saturday. Goodbye.